you find the best area for solar, average rainfalls, fish contamination advisories, and major transportation routes. In the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA, you will find the information you want with over 50 interactive parameters that you control. Find everything from housing prices and taxes to brewing environmental catastrophes. Locate billion-dollar disaster-prone areas, the safest cities, ideal solar locations, and much, much more. Complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution, full-color maps.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views I've expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for hopefully for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Mr. Richard Gage, who actually had, he is with an organization known as Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and of course he is dedicated to getting the truth out about what really happened on September 11th, 2001. And of course we've been told, oh my goodness, there were all these 19 Arabs who came over here, most of them from Saudi Arabia, and that was part of the disinformation, and they of course plotted and they seized the airplanes, but of course it really isn't true. In fact, we don't even know if there were people were on the airplanes, because, of course, a number of them are alive and well. The same people are alive and well with the same pictures we were shown, but they're living over in the Near East or the Middle East today. How could that be if they died on the planes? Well, of course, the big question is really not the fact that something crashed into the North Tower and the South Tower, although, you know, many people saw the plane crash into the South Tower. It is very fortuitous that there was actually a picture of a plane hitting the North Tower. Was it real? Was it contrived? I don't know. But what I do know is that we have not been told the truth. How do I know that? Well, because Building 7 came down at 5:20 in the afternoon, and everything about it showed that it was a controlled explosion. It was a controlled destruction. It looked just exactly like any other building that's ever come down as part of a controlled demolition. But then this is not my field of expertise. It's the field of expertise of Mr. Richard Gage, who's with us right now. Richard, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, and it's an honor to be with you on your program here.
Well, why don't you just go ahead and you tell our listeners how you got involved in this whole issue, and then we'll certainly go through step by step why the information we've gotten is not true.
Okay. Well, I've been an architect for over 20 years. I worked on all types of different projects, including steel-framed mid-rise buildings in Las Vegas, and most recently a $400 million project, which is now stopped due to the economy. But two and a half years ago, I was listening to a program on the way to a meeting, and I was so shocked I had to pull over. It was David Ray Griffin discussing, you remember him?
Oh, yes, we've had him on a couple of times. He's a wonderful chap, but you go right ahead.
Oh, boy, did he turn me around. Not before that radio interview had I ever conceived that there was another theory of how these buildings might have come down. I just bought hook, line, and sinker, the official story, as I think most Americans had done. And what he was talking about was the newly released oral histories from the city archives, the city's chief commissioner, Thomas von Essen, ordered 500 of his paramedics and other first responders, firemen, etc., to record what they saw, what they heard. And it turns out over 118 of these accounts of the oral histories, which we didn't even know about until 2005, talk about sounds of explosions and flashes of light at the beginning of the collapse of the Twin Towers, each of them. And this is extremely disturbing. I mean, I'd never heard this. But neither had I heard until 2.5 years ago about the collapse of Building 7,
which we were just talking about. Hold that thought, Richard. We're going
to
be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. Richard Gage, who's an architect, and he's worked for many years on steel buildings, and it really wasn't until a couple of years ago that he was driving someplace, and he happened to turn on the radio, and he heard certainly one of our guests, David Ray Griffith, who is actually a theologian, but he had taken this issue on, and Mr. Griffith was giving an interview and was talking about the personal interviews with many of the people who witnessed the explosions at the World Trade Center before the building came down. And then, of course, he began talking about Building 7, the building that came down at 5:20 in the afternoon, which, if you've ever seen the pictures of it, was obviously a controlled demolition. It wasn't hit by any airplane. There were a few fires in there, but they were not major fires. Why did Building 7 come down? Well, I've talked to people who were actually involved with clearing up the debris, and they thought there was a controlled demolition. But I'm going to let Mr. Gage, who certainly is an expert on this field, pick up the story. So you pick up the story, please.
You betcha. Well, the thing that disturbs those of us, 562 of us, by the way, now, architects and engineers, signed on to the website Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which is ae911truth.org. They're disturbed about how a 47-story skyscraper can collapse to its demise in a neat pile in just 6.5 seconds. Now, we're told by NIST, who has taken 7 years to try to explain this building, and finally, this summer, they came out with their final report, they call it, which says, well, we know how this building came down, and we know how it didn't come down. It didn't come down by controlled demolition. And they give the weakest possible reasons why they suggest that, ignoring all of the evidence that has been assembled, in fact, part of it by FEMA early on, a year after the collapse of this building on 9/11, including several tons of molten metal found underneath the Building 7, as well as the Twin Towers, by the way.
Well, what would molten metal be doing there? I mean, why would you have molten metal if it was just sort of a telescoping collapse?
Well, we had 8 to 10 small fires in this building and a whole lot of smoke, and no office fire can or has ever produced molten metal. So your question is dead on.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Yeah, this is Dr. Stan. And certainly, Mr. Ray Graves was just pointing out that, certainly at the bottom of Building 7 down in the basement, there was molten metal there, and there was molten metal in the Twin Towers. And as he says, there's no incident in all history where you've had certainly office fires or office building fires that were hot enough to melt steel, and, of course, where you would have molten metal, pools of molten metal. There had to be something else than to hot enough to melt the steel. And not only that, but many times these pools of molten metal remain molten for days afterwards, didn't they, Richard?
Weeks, actually. In fact, the structural engineer for the World Trade Center himself, Leslie Robertson, said to a conference of structural engineers in October, a month after, he said, as of 21 days after the attacks, molten steel was still running. Well, it turns out not to be steel at all. The chemical analysis of this substance determines that it's molten iron. Now, where did the molten iron come from? It's not leached out of steel in a melting process. First of all, the temperatures aren't hot enough. 14 to 1600 degrees maximum temperatures in office fires, Fahrenheit, don't melt steel. Steel doesn't even begin to melt until 2700 degrees or more. So it turns out that this molten iron is what's found, and along with it are found aluminum, iron oxide, manganese, fluorine, and 1,3-diphenylpropane. That's found in the dust. All of these things, all of these ingredients are the byproducts of thermite, which is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. This is molten iron is produced magnificently. If your listeners, I would encourage them to Google thermite. It's an incredible process. So this is what we find. It's the chemical signature of thermite, and it's found under the World Trade Center buildings. It's found under Building 7, and it is a smoking gun, one of several. But the behavior of the building itself is even more startling, because what it does, and you can see this on our website, ae911truth.org, when the building comes precipitously down at free fall speed for 2.5 seconds or 3.5 seconds, a distance of over 100 feet, it's falling at free fall speed straight down into its own footprint. Now, this themselves tells us that the only way that a building can fall that fast is if there's no structure. In other words, the columns have to have been removed, which is the how they do typical explosive-controlled demolitions. They have to remove the columns within a tenth of a second of each other, or the building begins to sway. Now, this building's collapse is blamed on fire, not impacts from World Trade Center 1, which there was some minor damage, and not from diesel fuel fires either. Normal building office fires, which we're told expanded these long-span steel beams and pushed the girder off of its seat, causing the floor to collapse, actually about 9 of them, and then beginning this interior precipitating collapse, for which we have no evidence, by the way, on the outside of Building 7. Even their computer models show bulging and indentations and warpage of the exterior perimeter steel frame skeleton. But the videos show none of that. It goes straight down smooth, and there's no warpage. So the evidence contradicts their theory from beginning to end, and they ignore all of that evidence that FEMA produced where there is the melting of steel girders, holes like Swiss cheese in steel girders. In fact, they call it sulfidation. Sulfur is an added ingredient in thermite, which produces thermate, which causes even faster melting of steel. Intergranular melting, FEMA documents. All of this was summarily ejected from the evidence in NIST's final report. And this is why the 562 architects and engineers that I represent are demanding a real investigation, one that accounts for all of the evidence found at the crime scene.
Well, you know, I think that what's so important for people to realize is that if you knew what really happened, if you were part of the demolition, you wouldn't dare speak out because they would frankly kill you. And in fact, we've talked about, you know, the men on the USS Liberty in 1967 who were attacked, and there was obviously a plan to sink the ship. And they were told when the ship didn't sink and God intervened and saved the lives of the crew members who did survive, they were told that they would be sent to prison or worse. And of course, that meant they would be killed if they ever dared to speak out and tell the American people what really happened. And for 20 years, up until the 1990s, the members of the crew there remained silent. If the same thing is going on today, nobody would dare come forward. What do you honestly think, if you're in the listening audience, would happen to somebody who came forward and said, I know what happened, I was there? Well, I can tell you what's happened to a couple of people who've tried to reveal what happened, like Jimmy Walters, a multimillionaire. He's living in terror and fear over in Europe in seclusion. Nobody knows where he is. Michael Rupert, who used to be a very good ministry. He's, after they tried to poison him, why he's living in seclusion in Canada. This has actually happened to people in the United States who tried to bring out the truth about what happened on that terrible day, because think of the implications. If we've not been told the truth, then all the people who've died in Iraq have died for nothing. Both the Americans and the Iraqis, all the people who've died in Afghanistan, and all the Americans who've died fighting there, it's died for nothing. So the implications of this is why it's so very important. How are we going to get an independent investigation, Richard? Certainly the government's not going to investigate it, and any government official who tried to investigate it would be destroyed or would be killed. I mean, we're dealing with ruthless people, unfortunately.
Well, I assume that that's all the case. However, changes of the magnitude that's required here only come from citizens who gather in great numbers, and the word is being spread about the truth about 9/11 from mouth to mouth, and there are millions now, but there are millions, and millions more required. And what we're about at AE 9/11 Truth is to facilitate that word, lend the credentials and the architects and engineers who are putting their reputations, their licenses on the line, saying, yes, these are controlled demolitions, and we really have to have a real investigation with subpoena power. And we're standing behind the 9/11 Truth movement and giving them weight, gravitas, so that when people talk to somebody, they're not just giving a conspiracy theory. They're given science-based forensic facts, which are all found on our website, ae911truth.org, and in our DVD, which can be purchased on the website, and also with several different videos on our YouTube channel, which the YouTube channel being ae911truth.org. So we've provided the information out there, a whole lot more, of course, than we have had time so far to talk about. We'll get to the Twin Towers next. There are a few more points that should be made, though, about World Trade Center 7 going down.
Will you please go right ahead and make them then?
Okay, well, for a building to come down and in 6.5 seconds, what we're talking about, even 15 seconds if you add the internal failure that NIST is alleging, we're talking about the failure of 400 structural steel connections per second. This is not only unprecedented, it's absolutely impossible. These are highly redundant structures with safety factors capable of handling 3 to 5 times more load than the building is ever expected to endure in its lifetime. But not only evidence like that, but there turns out to be foreknowledge of the building's collapse. For instance, the BBC announced the collapse 20 minutes before it happened. Now, what's that all about? They really do, and they apologize for this grievous error, citing the confusing events of the day. But does that make them psychic? You know, it's just not. There's a script going around here to kind of make sure everybody gets on the same page. And unfortunately, CNN missed that page because they announced the collapse or reported the collapse at 10:45 in the morning. They say a fireman came rushing by and said a 50-story building had collapsed. Well, this was just immediately after the towers had collapsed and Building 7 hadn't even been on fire yet. And there's no other 50-story building around. Interesting thing is, had Building 7 come down at 10:45 in the morning, it would have been overshadowed completely by the panic and the collapsing of the World Trade Center 1 and 2 and the clouds of debris, which we're going to talk about, would have obscured it almost completely. So the foreknowledge is almost as disturbing. There's a policeman also announcing a flame and debris coming down. The building is about to blow up, pushing people back from Building 7. Now, how is he announcing the building's about to blow up in the afternoon when there's only a few small visible fires? Fires, by the way, have never brought down a high-rise steel frame building. We've had up to 100 examples of fires in these buildings, and some of them much hotter, longer-lasting, and larger fires than we experience in any of the World Trade Center buildings.
Well, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Richard, you go right ahead.
Okay. So the Building 7 is of great concern to those of us architects and engineers in the building industry, because this, if this building collapsed due to normal office fires, as we're told, what does that mean for the safety of the hundreds of skyscrapers that are existing now? NIST is saying, well, they you don't have to worry about all of them, just the ones that have these particular sets of characteristics. So, of course, everybody's very nervous. The codes, the building codes would require radical changes if this were true, but nobody's changing the building codes on any kind of radical basis at all. These buildings are fireproofed. They're designed to protect buildings up to 2 hours, but there's been fires that have lasted 10, 20 hours in modern steel frame skyscrapers. Not one has ever collapsed. So the importance of the fireproofing in Building 7 is that this particular building was not hit by an airplane. And so it didn't have, the official story didn't have the excuse to tell us that the fireproofing was knocked off. Fires only last in a given area about 20 minutes. They move on looking for fresh new fuel sources. In a typical office building, has consumables that'll keep a fire going only that long. And yet NIST tells us, and they need to tell us this, because they're trying to show these massive fires that lasted an hour or to an hour and a half around column 79, which is the culprit on the 12th floor that is said to have been the area where the fires started and did the initiation of collapse started there. And yet the photographs all show that those fires were out, after about 20, 30 minutes in that area. They don't show the massive fires that NIST claims. So once again, the photographic and video evidence contradicts NIST's story again and again in Building 7. When we get to the Twin Towers, we're going to see the same thing.
Well, you know, the thing is that, unfortunately, there seems to be an organized effort to confuse the American people. But why would it take 7 years to come up with an explanation of why Building 7 came down? You'd think that in a few months or at the most a year, they could come up with an explanation. Why did it take so long to figure out why Building 7 came down? And is there any evidence to back up their statements?
Well, I think one possibility is that they thought if they just delayed it, that the issue would go away. Maybe they'd never have to produce it. They certainly had a great deal of difficulty trying to match the computer models to the videos, because they couldn't even accomplish that after 7 years. There's so many holes in the official theory. You can read our response to that, which is also on our website, and it is just ludicrous. And they don't even produce the assumptions and inputs to their computer modeling. You can't check this stuff. This is supposed to be an open investigation. It's a
hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan Richard is just saying that ordinarily, you know, if you're going to have an investigation, you just show people what the evidence is. There's supposed to be an open investigation. It should be your access to the computer models that they use to justify their position. But they actually are concealing some of the evidence, aren't they, one way or the other, and not making the information that they've used to justify their position readily available? Is that correct?
Oh, yes. And in the beginning, they even denied that the building came down at free fall speed. They said 40% of gravity. But the measurements clearly show. And we called them on this in their live conference. And there's an excellent video that shows the collapse of Building 7 on our website, ae911truth.org, by David Chandler. And he's a physicist, and he clearly documents the free fall collapse in the first two and a half seconds. And that's 100 foot of drop of this building with no resistance from the 40,000 tons of steel designed to resist any such collapse. There's no resistance, indicating that the columns had to have been removed. So this is so NIST has turned around. Now, they were forced to acknowledge free fall for 2.25 seconds, which puts them in a real bind because there's no explaining that away. They simply don't even attempt to.
Well, of course, if the building started to collapse, you would have to do away with all of the major columns at one time. Otherwise, it would tip to one side or the other, wouldn't it?
Yes, synchronistically timed floor by floor starting at the base. And we do have witnesses hearing sounds of explosions at the base. Kevin McPadden, an Air Force medic who was a first responder on 9/11, describes huge explosions, the ground rumbling. You had to grab onto something, is what he was talking. In fact, before that, he even heard a countdown on a radio being held by a Red Cross worker at the line where they were pushing the public back to. It said 3, 2, 1, and then a second later he heard these explosions. So that is pretty clear evidence. We have Craig Bartmer, a New York Police Department whistleblower, who's hearing sounds of explosions. He says, I think I know an explosion when I hear it. So the evidence is rather startling. These 118 first responders hearing explosions and seeing actual flashes of light at the beginning of the collapse of the Twin Towers. This is one of the most startling pieces of evidence, none of which... And there's news reporters describing huge explosions, eyewitnesses, people in the building. There's dozens of them, all documented on our DVD, hearing all these explosions, none of which are a part of the official story of what happened on 9/11. It's all been cleansed. The media appears to have cleansed all of these stories, including, for instance, the lateral ejection of these 4 and 20-ton perimeter wall units from the Twin Towers landing 600 feet away on the Winter Gardens. And this takes that lateral energy, and they had to have ejected at 55 miles per hour, instant lateral speed in order to get that far away. 1,200 foot diameter debris field. And guess what? Most all of this material is ejected outside the footprint of the Twin Towers, a very different explosive demolition than the classic demolition that we see in Building 7, where it lands neatly into its own footprint in a tidy pile. The Twin Towers were extremely explosive, and for instance, none of the floors, 110 floors, none of them land at the bottom of either of the Twin Towers. It's all blown outside. There's only a couple of stories of debris, of columns and aluminum cladding and other debris at the bottom. No floors. What's up with that? If it's a pancaking collapse, we're looking for maybe half the floors at least. or 10 of them, but there's not even one.
Now, there was something really almost vaporized the cement on the floors. Would that be a fair appraisal?
Well, there's 90,000 tons of concrete flooring in each of these twin towers, and that concrete has been pulverized to a fine powder, 100 microns to 10 mil. This is an extremely small particle, so an incredibly explosive force would be required to reduce concrete to that level of particle size.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Richard Gage. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Richard, you were just talking about the particle size, that obviously something had almost vaporized the cement, but also the bodies, weren't there an awful lot of bodies? I think there were some 1,100 bodies were never found. They just almost seemed to have been vaporized as well.
Yeah, there was fewer than 300 bodies of the 27 that were found whole. And you're right. There were 20,000 pieces of body all together. In fact, there were 700 bone fragments, less than half an inch long, found just on top of the skyscraper across the street from the South Tower. And how could they get so small? And how did they get over there? They're a part of what was these tiny, small fragments blown in all directions equally. So the 700 bone fragments were only the ones that just landed on the Deutsche Bank building, and it's not from the airplane. I mean, the airplane flew over the Deutsche Bank building, hit the South Tower, and sent its ejections out the other side. So this did come from the dust cloud, which was massive and developed all at once at the beginning, before there was any development of gravitational potential of these falling masses above the plane impacts in the towers. You have these, like a belt, like the firemen described them, wrapping all the way around the building, equidistant, symmetrical display of explosions is the only way it can be described, all the way around. And in the case of the North Tower, there's like three levels of these explosions destroying the upper block such that it reduces its volume to less than seven stories. It's cut in half before there's any downward movement. In other words, in two seconds, this mass has completely destroyed itself, such that there's no pile driver, if you will, pushing the rest of the building down. It's destroyed itself in the first 3 seconds or so. And then what you have after that, all you can see in the videos is the building kind of tearing itself apart from the top down with this developing mushroom cloud. And so at almost free fall speed, in other words, this is accelerating down. David Chandler did analysis of this top section.
Hold that thought, Richard. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess is Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And, of course, Richard, I want you to get out your website so people can go there, they can see this for themselves. If they have any question that these buildings came down spontaneously, I think if they look at the pictures again, especially building number 7, which you could begin to see the top of this caving in, and then it looked like the bottom simply went out, and then it came down and looked like a typical controlled, destruction, demolition. Because when you have a controlled demolition, you always have to take out the central core supports, and so that's why the center of the building comes down first, and then the base of the building seemed to just disintegrate. Was that pretty well what happened with Building 7? What was your impression? Because you, I'm sure, studied this more than I have, but it looked like the base of the building went, whereas, of course, with the Twin Towers, they collapsed from the top down. It looked like Building 7 collapsed from the bottom, and then they came down from above.
Yeah, in Building 7, it was apparent that the core columns were taken out first because the penthouse falls first, just a second before the overall. And in fact, 3 seconds before that, the east penthouse collapses, which is under column 79, which is why NIST focuses their initiation of collapse there. So, this is the purpose of a controlled demolition, to bring a building straight down into its own footprint, and so as to not damage other buildings. So they take the core columns out first, and that drops the penthouse, which is what we see. And there's a classic kink in the middle, because we want the outside of the building to collapse in over the top. And we had a 47-story skyscraper with moment and steel frame resisting moment and brace frames in it, which the moment frames are very stiff. So if unless you cut all the columns and beams, you can't get a 47-story skyscraper to collapse into what amounts to a house of cards only 4 or 5 stories tall. So all the steel skeleton members had to have been cut. And the ends of those beams are the ones that FEMA documented as having intergranular melting, rapid oxidation, and sulfidation. The fire protection engineer, Jonathan Barnett, described it as partially evaporated, the ends of these beams. So it's very, very telling. In the case of the Twin Towers, it's the same thing in essence, because we have a symmetrical, almost free-fall collapse, and we don't call it a collapse, it's a destruction. But everything's being blown outside, as we talked about. In fact, there are explosions occurring 20, 40, and 60 stories below this canopy of destruction up above that are violent ejections at 160 to 200 feet per second. These can only be propelled by explosives, and they're geometrically precise between the corners of the buildings. So this is a very planned event, if you will.
Well, why don't you go ahead and give your website once again so people can actually go there and see the videos. I think when you see that video of Building 7 coming down, in your heart of hearts you'll know it was a controlled demolition. And if it was a controlled demolition, then everything else we've been told is a lie. But how can people get your website, and what will they find there?
Yes, on the website, ae911truth.org, standing for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, we have the PowerPoint presentation that I've used to give in dozens of cities around the United States and Canada and Europe. We have the PowerPoint that you can step through very carefully at your own pace. You can also purchase the DVD, and there is a list of evidence there. There's technical articles. You can sign our petition. I encourage all of your listeners to sign our petition and also assist us, as we are funded only by the graciousness of our supporters to become sustaining members of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. I mean, for as little as $10 a month, you can go a great distance to help us to get this information to architects, engineers, and all others across the country. Very important one.
And I think, of course, the important thing is you've got the DVDs there where people can actually watch these buildings come down. And, of course, the fact, and I don't think most people realize, that there were 1,100 bodies that were never found. They just vaporized. How could you vaporize bodies if what happened, we're told, came down? You had the pancake effect. Why, the cement would have been there. The cement floors would have been there. The bodies would have been there. They might have been crushed, but they would have been there. But those bodies simply, most of them just vaporized. In fact, almost everything in the building vaporized. How, if this was a pancake collapse, would things vaporize?
Yes, including 10,000 or more steel filing cabinets, which they didn't find one of. The only filing cabinet they could identify as such was this mangled piece of metal that you could pick up with your little finger, and it was in the basement. That's the only way that it survived. Yeah, this is very, very disturbing. We would have expected the floors to trap the bodies, but there were no bodies, there were no floors. All we have left, largely, is concrete dust, individual broken up steel frame elements, and aluminum cladding.
But of course, they cannot let the American people think about that, because the American people begin to think, they might begin to realize that we've been lied to about so many things. And this, of course, is one of the most important ones. Richard, as you talk to people about this, what sort of response do you get?
It varies across the board. Just today, I spoke with a woman who said she had an intuition. As soon as she saw it that day on TV, that this is not real. This doesn't look right. And she's not an architect or anything. She did some research right after that. And there were people like Alex Jones and others who were talking about this, and who apparently knew that this was going on. This was some sort of inside operation, because let's face it, Al Qaeda didn't have access, probably, to these buildings. Had to have been one of the most secure buildings outside the Pentagon, three of the most anyway, because in Building 7 we have the IRS, the Secret Service, the Department of Defense, Emergency Operations Center for the city. I mean, this is a very highly secure building. And the type of thermite charge that's found is not even normal thermite. We're talking about a very high-tech form of thermite called nanothermite, because the particles are nano-sized particles. They're made, you know, in laboratories. This is not made in a cave in Afghanistan, this stuff. And it turns out that the people who specialize in high-tech nanothermite, interestingly enough, are found, the representatives of those companies are found in the investigative team of NIST on these towers. And that excellent research has been performed by Kevin Ryan. And there's a paper on this very subject at journalof911studies.com. And people can find the very, very interesting connections between NIST and nano-high-tech thermite. It's like putting the wolves in charge of the sheep to protect, I suppose, their own interests, steer the investigation away from the analysis of the evidence for controlled demolition. We're told by NIST that they did not find any evidence for controlled demolition. Well, later they tell us that they never looked for it. You know, it's like a gray lie that we used to, you know, tell our parents when we tried to get out of something when we got in trouble. Later we find out, oh, they never looked for it. Well, of course they didn't look for it. But hundreds of architects, engineers, scientists, and others looked for it, and it really was not hard to find. It is all documented on our website, on Jim Hoffman's excellent website, WTC7.net. It's found on Stephen Jones's excellent website, Scholars for 9/11 Truth and Justice, STJ911.org or com, I forget which.
Well, people just type in, Google it in Stephen Jones and get to the website, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And is Dr. Jones still working on this? And David Ray Griffith, are they still trying to get the truth out?
They both sure are. I've been working together with both of them as well. And they are speaking around the country. Dr. Jones last year found additional evidence, another smoking gun in the dust samples. He has four of them from different sources, one across the street from the World Trade Center is Liberty Apartments, and the apartment there filled with this dust, on top of a skyscraper two blocks away, and over all the way to the Brooklyn Bridge. This dust in 10 minutes was covering the Brooklyn Bridge, and this gentleman collected a whole bunch of it. Anyway, there's several samples like this, and in each one of them he finds these tiny red chips, fairly tough material, almost like a paint chip, but much more fibrous, I guess. And the red side is the thickest side, and the back side is the gray side, appears to be some kind of primer. Well, the red side is composed of extremely small particles, 3 and 4 nanometers, of iron oxide powder mixed with aluminum powder. Guess what that is? It's thermite. And so finely mixed and so small that the chemical reaction between those two main elements, along with the auxiliary minor elements, such as fluorine and manganese, potassium permanganate, it becomes extremely explosive. This is why it's called super thermite. And this stuff is very, very, very difficult to get, and it's only made in a laboratory. And he finds these chips in all 4 of his samples. So I encourage people to take a very close look at that startling research by Dr. Jones.
All right,
is the media
fine.
Interested in picking this up? No. We have all tried again and again. They're just not covering this story.
And we have to ask why the media won't cover it. Well, let's go to Ben, who's calling from Salinas. Hi, Ben. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. I'm referring to the testimony of Aaron Russo at the 9/11 Commission. He was one of the rescue workers. And several hundred of the firefighters and rescue workers that came in the building talked about those explosions. Now, I live in the world of acoustics and physics. Explosions such as bullet shots and explosions have what's called an acoustical signature. All of those radio calls, you could hear the sequential explosions. Those explosions have acoustic signatures that can provably prove those were detonation explosives which led to this thing, and I wish that they would consider all the evidence and let's have a real 9/11 investigation. Starting with those acoustic signatures on shots and explosions, they're still using that to discover what happened on Dealey Plaza November 22nd of 63. The acoustic signature is a fact, and it's as provable as the air we breathe along with the thermite.
Okay, thanks very much, Ben. Do you have any comment at all on that, Richard, the idea of the acoustic signals that were there that, on the tape recordings? Certainly they should be able to tell us a great deal, but then so much of this information has been actively suppressed by people at the highest levels of government.
Yeah, but I would expect there to be a number of recordings that would still have that information. And
right.
So I'm calling publicly for such analysis. This is an extremely important point that the caller is making, Ben. But Aaron Russo is a director, not a rescue worker, unless
right.
There's 2 Aaron Russos.
This is a different Aaron Russo than our friend, oh?
Oh, okay.
Okay, fine. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. Do you have a question for our guest?
Regarding the NIST report from August 21st last year, they actually came out and said in their press release that our take-home message today is that WTC-7 collapsed because of fires fueled by office furnishings. My question is, how do they expect anybody to believe that?
how do you expect people to believe, you know, that the fires of the office furniture were sufficient to bring down a 47-story building, especially take out the major steel supports in the center of the building so it would collapse at the speed of gravity, and, of course, that it would collapse inward and fall into its own footprint. Do you think the average person is really foolish enough to believe that just because it's said?
Well, first of all, I don't think the average person knew that Building 7 that there was a collapse of a 47-story skyscraper on 9/11, or that there was an investigation, or that this conference ever happened, because it was not widely publicized. There's a small story on it in the New York Times, and they quote us, fortunately, but it's way back in the back of the paper. So it's only the people who were keenly interested in this subject. First of all, the 9/11 truth movement, by and large, who even knew about it. Second of all, they spent 7 years trying to finally craft, and millions and millions and millions of our tax dollars, this concoction of this explanation. They have to show that this wasn't a 20-minute fires, but they didn't justify how it lasted longer than 20 minutes on the 12th floor. They had an hour and a half of fire somehow. there, and then they theorized, hypothesized that this expanded the 50-foot-long steel beams, which then pushed the girder off of its seat. And even if that could happen, the floor wouldn't have just caved in. It's redundant. It's reinforced. There's steel studs connecting the girder to the concrete floor above. And even if it had fallen, it would not have caused the collapse of the highly redundant next floor, or the floor under it, or the floor under it. But the theory, their hypothesis is that eventually there were 9 of these floors that collapsed, leaving this column unbuckled. And so finally, when it buckled underneath the east penthouse comes down. And then there's a lateral translation of this instability through the building. Now, all this happens in like 5 or 10 seconds inside the building before, theoretically, the overall building comes down. And yet there's no deformation on the exterior perimeter of this building when this is happening, but there is on their computer models, which is just a dead giveaway. And why normal architects and engineers, normal, those who are not privy to the information disseminated by the 9/11 truth movement, why there wasn't a big stink about this in mainstream circles of architecture and engineering, I'll never know. All I can presume is that they're not interested. They're putting this behind them. They're willing to take the official story without seriously considering it or analyzing it themselves.
Well, of course, what we need to do is keep this issue constantly before them, and maybe they'll be driving down the road in their automobile like you were a couple of years ago and hear something that they'll suddenly say, my goodness, could it possibly be truth? Mike, thanks very much, and hang on just a moment, Richard. We'll wrap up the program shortly. Well, you now have 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us. What are your final thoughts for our listeners?
Well, I can tell you this. Nothing will happen of import relative to getting a new investigation if every one of us who hears about this information does not get off our fanny and take action. And all of us are called to take a different kind of action. A minimum action would be to get some of the cards that we have. You can buy 100 of these index cards that have all of the postcards, have all the information highlighted for Building 7 and the Twin Towers, and we can just hand those out. We can leave them wherever we are. We can get on the computer at 3 in the morning when we're not sleeping and send to our friends, or preferably even architects and engineers, the link to our website, ae911truth.org. This has woken up many people, hearing from friends, colleagues, about the collapses of these buildings. Encourage them to take a look at this evidence. You don't have to say, well, I'm a conspiracy theorist and here's my conspiracy. No. You say, there's this group of 560 architects and engineers. Please, check this out, Mr. Architect, in our local community. I'm not an architect or engineer. Please, check this out. Tell us if it makes any sense. Are they just conspiracy theorists? It looks like they have facts. Let me know. I'm very concerned. And send that email along with our link, and there's a 3-page letter people can download right from our website for this purpose, and you can send it to architects and engineers. It's addressed from me to them. There's so much that can be done. We can call our newspapers, radio, TV. We can be out in the street with the folks from We Are Change who have signs and banners and their leaflets in the street and T-shirts trying to get attention and wake up the American people. Obama says, yes, we can. And we say, yes, we can investigate 9/11. We'll use the positive momentum gained at today's inauguration and use it to the benefit of openness, clarity. After all, Obama said, let's return integrity to science in today's inauguration. So we'll call him to task on that. Demand that NIST, one of the key departments of science, in our country with a presidential appointee at the Department of Commerce overseeing this.
Well, we're out of time, Richard. God bless, and thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you've enjoyed our program with Richard Gage. And certainly, this is such an important issue. We must never, never let it forget. We owe it to the people who perished that day to bring the truth out and bring those responsible for their murder, because they were murdered. And they were not murdered by a bunch of 19 hijackers. Most of what you think you know has simply been created. After all, as Edward Bernays said, the conscious and organized manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate the specific means of control are the true invisible government of our nation. We are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes are formed, our ideas created largely by men we have never heard of. And that's true, especially with this. We actually have two great four tape sets with on this subject. And, of course, one of them, why you'll actually hear my interview with Jimmy Walters, a couple of hours of interviews with Mr. Walters, who's living in hiding in fear in Europe because of the threats on his life. Why? Because he spent millions of dollars trying to get the truth out. He really was dedicated. And they came after him to destroy him. Why would they do that if there was no conspiracy? And then, of course, my interviews with Mr. William Rodriguez, who was the last person out of the North Tower before it collapsed, and he heard the explosions in the building before the plane struck the top of the building. You want to get our four tape sets on 9/11. We have five excellent DVDs, 9/11 Mysteries, and, of course, my talk on what happened, and a DVD by our good friend David Walker. We have actually Mr. Gage's DVD, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Give us a call of 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. We actually carry the terror timeline, the timeline of what actually happened. It's an excellent source of information. We have pamphlets. There are three pamphlets. And they're only, I think, $3.95 each. But my compilation of information over a period of several years, put together into three pamphlets called Foreknowledge 9/11, and they did have foreknowledge in 9/11. And then we have another one updated, 9/11, what really happened. That's just a single pamphlet of about 50 pages. You need to have this information of watching those DVDs. And, of course, they are available. You can actually want to see some of the pictures of the Twin Towers coming down, specifically Building 7. You can go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and go to the section on other videos. And we have a lot of YouTube connections, and some of them are Building 7 coming down. You need to see it. And you realize it was a controlled demolition. That means all those people were murdered. They were murdered in cold blood, and there's a conscious effort to conceal the truth from the American people. Are you concerned? Because exactly these same people that, are working today to conceal the fact that they created the economic collapse that is going to steal your life savings, your pension money, everything you've spent your whole life working for. And, of course, you need to understand there really are organizations out there to work within the shadows. That's why you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to actually see my talk on the Forbidden Secret and the syllabus that goes with that. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and begin to understand we're involved in the spiritual battle that's being fought on a political, an ideological, and cultural battlefield. But there is a supernatural element to what's going on. Certainly, we have a little pamphlet that's written by the people on the other side. It's called The Working of the Spiritual Hierarchy. And if you get any of our other items and you ask for that, we'll be glad to send it to you free of charge. The Working of the Spiritual Hierarchy, working produced by the other side, that tells you exactly what they're doing and what the plan is. And when they talk about the plan, there's always a capital P, because they understand there is a supernatural plan to bring about a new world order, a new world religion, and install a new world leader. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Get the DVDs from there and get the other material as well. And then please pray.